shore.
Yes, it did. It came right across, right down over top of us, right there.
There is the Hurricane Landfall Project truck. It's all set up, strapped down. We're going to turn all the switches on in just a little while. Standing outside of the Chevy Tahoe, we are getting into the eye wall of Hurricane Gene right now. Four came in on shore here along the southeast coast of Florida.
These little bullet cams right here that we will use to record that surge.
It's about 9 o'clock now, central time, which means that if we set them up and turn them on right now, they'd run until about noon tomorrow.
Does thunderstorm activity appear to consolidate around that eye?
That is storm surge from the Atlantic Ocean, the overwash coming in.
You're listening to Stories from the Hurricane Highway, the weekly podcast series that takes an in-depth look back at over two decades of tracking hurricanes, technology, behind-the-scenes stories, and much more. I'm your host, Mark Suddeth. So glad you could join me, and thank you for supporting this exclusive podcast via Patreon. Hello again, and welcome to another edition of Stories from the Hurricane Highway. I am excited to have you with me once again as we continue to look back at the historic, truly historic, hurricane season of 2005. That's what we have been covering since last December, and we will continue to do so over the next few weeks here as we wrap up season two of this podcast series. More than likely, we will finish things off with Hurricane Wilma coming up in the next few weeks. But first, a truly exceptional and amazing set of stories. I mean, all the things I'm about to tell you regarding the next big one in our story here along the Hurricane Highway, that's Hurricane Rita. And boy, when I tell you about some of these things, and it's funny because Rita was kind of sandwiched between, there's no kind of, it was, you know, truly historic, impactful, controversial, tragic, all those adjectives, Katrina at the end of August. And then you had Wilma towards the end of October, which ended the landfalls for the United States, thank goodness. But wow, what a big way, as we'll get to with Wilma. But in between was Rita. And I won't say that it was forgotten, because that certainly wasn't the case, because the people that it impacted, they certainly didn't forget about it. But it kind of got lost in the shuffle, and it's not really until you remind people of Rita that they say, oh yeah, that's right, Rita, dang, that was really bad, or it had the potential to be even worse, and the setup was definitely there. So that's what we're going to talk about in this episode of Stories from the Hurricane Highway. So just before we get there, though, think about where we have been already in the 05 season. Think about just the month of July. We had Dennis and Emily, two very powerful hurricanes. Emily, as it turns out, was a Category 5 in post-analysis. Dennis almost got there, peaking out at 150 at one point. Then in August, of course, the mighty Katrina, and all of the turmoil and tragedy, and again, the controversy, the political strife. Wow, what a major disaster. I mean, on so many levels, Katrina was, and the ghost of that still certainly remains imprinted on the landscape, on the psyche of the people down on the Gulf Coast, even today. I'm putting this together in early May of 2021, and we're still talking about it. Much like people did after Camille, probably, in 1969. Hurricanes will tend to do that. They leave these lasting legacies. So the 05 season, definitely major impacts, already historic up to this point, getting through Katrina. Then in early September into mid-September, as you know, I dealt with Ophelia. I had one unmanned camera box put back together, ready to go for Ophelia. Had the weather station out there, the wind tower, the mobile buoy, the behemoth, whatever you want to call it. And as lumbering and annoying as Ophelia was, you know, it was a chance, as I mentioned in the last episode, to get back up on my horse, so to speak, and get out there and try to dust myself off from getting knocked down after Katrina, really put a dent in my ambitions to change the world and how we looked at hurricanes. I was not going to be dissuaded, so I was ready to go. And so, lo and behold, mid-September rolls around. We're finished with Ophelia. I'm back in Wilmington watching everything, talking about it on the website, and conferring with Michael Watkins, Jesse Bass. You know, we're all watching things closely. And sure enough, around the 17th or so of September, we get another tropical depression. This one is number 18. You know, after Ophelia, of course, we had, and in between there was Nate and Philippe, you know, kind of lost in the shuffle. Both of those were hurricanes. Both of those basically non-consequential, certainly to the lower 48. But Rita was going to be different. That was, I think, almost a certainty once I saw it popping up in the computer models. And, you know, I had access to the GFS back then off the NCEP site, National Centers for Environmental Prediction. That's what NCEP, N-C-E-P stands for. We didn't have tropical tidbits like we do now. And we didn't have Ben Knoll tweeting about things. You know, Ben Knoll was probably, I don't know how old he is, but he was probably a teenager back then, something like that. And, you know, all the other advantages that we have in 2021, we didn't have those in 2005. And yet, we still saw what we needed to see in the guidance, the GFS, the Hurricane Center forecasts, their outlooks, and so forth. And I'm telling you, the seedling that became Rita definitely had the look overall. So it was around the 17th of September. Rita becomes, well, it's Tropical Depression 18 first. And even in those early days, the first couple of days of that lifespan, I knew this one is going to be big. It's going to be, I just had that feeling, that instinct, that gut feeling. And this is going to give me a chance to redeem myself, I felt, in a very big way. I just didn't know exactly where or to what extent that would be. So one of the things that I want to make mention of in this first episode dedicated to the Rita saga is the fact that I would be working this mission alone. I would physically be alone for the most part, setting up the equipment, doing all the driving, everything that had to be done. I would be by myself in the physical sense, in the vehicle, in the Tahoe, setting up everything as I mentioned. You know, there was not going to be anybody available to help. And the reason was, Jesse had just finished helping me with Ophelia for several days, and he couldn't take what would amount to at least a week off and run down to the Gulf Coast with me. And we didn't know exactly where Rita was going to go. I might have to go to Florida first, potentially the Keys, and then over to the Gulf Coast. Is it going to be South Texas? I kind of thought so. Brownsville, you know, South Padre, maybe Corpus. You know, I didn't know yet. This was still very early on. And so Jesse was not available. And that's understandable. No complaints. It's just the way it was. Mike Watkins was not available for similar reasons. You know, he just couldn't up and leave his analytics job with Office Depot and run around with me for 5, 8, 9, 10 days at a time. And so I knew going into the Rita mission that I would do it by myself, which was okay. I felt like, you know, I know this stuff pretty well. I've got a trusty vehicle with the Chevy Tahoe, a nice, safe SUV. I'm going to have everything packed that I need. I've done this a few times just this season with these camera systems and so forth. And I'm going to tell you, even though I was going to be by myself, I had this renewed sense of optimism that I was going to have another chance to really prove that this system would work, that it would be viable and an incredible way to get closer to hurricanes than ever before using technology to solve that problem. And I really, really felt like this was going to be my opportunity because Rita, what became Rita, Tropical Storm Rita, there by the 18th, 19th, around that time, you know, really had the look and the guidance. I remember the GFDL. Remember that model? They don't do that one anymore. Now it's called the HMON. But the GFDL had this look to it, taking Rita through the Keys or just south of there, where in the inner nested grid model version of it that you could look at. I don't remember what site we would get that from back in the day, but you could, and it might have been off of INSEP's site, linked off of the Hurricane Center's homepage or something, but you could look at the GFDL, very similar to how we view a lot of these inner nested grid models, as they're called, the high-resolution stuff from Tropical Tidbits and other sites today. And I remember seeing that GFDL, and man, it just wrapped Rita up, had a well-established core, clearly the look of a major hurricane going into the Gulf. And at that point, it's like the old expression, a bull in a china shop. It's going to end up somewhere. You know, it's like sending a bowling ball down the alley and those little guardrail things are up for kids. You know, it doesn't matter. It can bounce off the guardrail. It's going to knock over some pins. And then it's just a question of whether or not it'll be a strike, you know, or 8 out of 10. Who knows? What's the impact going to be? And I think that's a good analogy here, that's it. It's a trapped bowling ball going down the alleyway towards those pins, and that's the Gulf of Mexico coastline. And we just hoped, in all sincerity, that it better be west of the Mississippi River, basically. West of New Orleans, I mean, please. They didn't need anything like that down there. Not near Mississippi, not near Alabama. That's the last thing they needed. That would just have been horrible. But the scenario was certainly on the table that, you know, the forecast uncertainty was enough that people recovering and dealing with and still struggling very much with Katrina's aftermath were on high alert. No question about it. So I had this renewed sense of optimism. I know that I'm going to be by myself, but again, no big deal. So I get everything packed up. I'm ready to go. I got Mike Watkins that's going to give me support on the back end, forecasting information, doing a few blog updates on hurricanetrack.com. And I'm going to remind you, it really wasn't called blogging back then like it is now, because we didn't have, at least to my knowledge, the way it is now, WordPress and all of that. So he would just write it up in the HTML like I do even today. And he would post stuff, and Jesse would help do the same if he needed to. I taught them both how to do that, to upload the main file to the website with a little chunk of the code dedicated to updating what we called the commentary. And, you know, they both agreed that they could help if I needed it, because, I mean, my goodness, I got to be driving. But you know what? It was really neat to know, too, that several dozen people were going to be watching on the live stream from the Tahoe, which I had gotten better and better at managing, got the bitrate better. You know, you just learn things. I had been doing this since Arlene, all the way back in June with Mike Watkins. We had Dennis, we had Katrina, we had Ophelia, and lots of other practice in between tweaking things, getting the bitrate right. And the bitrate, of course, is just the sample rate of how the video is encoded to go out over the Sprint network. And we really pushed it to the limits, you know, so that we got a better and better quality stream. Had audio with it, you know, always had audio with it, but even that was a little bit better. You know, raising the frame rate of the streaming video from 6 frames a second, 10 frames to maybe 15. You know, doing everything we could, trying to push the envelope of extraordinary coverage. I also knew, speaking of coverage, that my friend Jeff Flock and his partner, Rob Hess, in their Hurricane Now site. Remember we talked about that? We had Jeff on for a whole episode back in the Katrina saga there. That Jeff and the Hurricane Now team, might have even been Tom Casal as well coming, and I think even one of their other producer friends, it was a woman they brought with her. I don't recall her name. It might have been Deborah, but I can't remember. That's okay. Forgive me. There may have been 4 of them for Rita, because they too saw that, oh boy, this could be huge. And, you know, they were going to be out there. So I had people that I could kind of rely on if I ran into trouble, you know. And the point is, even though I was going to be alone physically, I was going to have a lot of help going into it. So the first thing I do, of course, pack up everything I need, got all 3 of these brand new cases, the camera systems, the batteries, the laptops, everything's brand new, got new Sprint cards. I mean, it's ready to go. Ready to try again. I'm back on my horse, and I felt like that horse was a stallion this time, baby. I mean, I was set. I really was. My confidence was up. And this really looked like a nasty hurricane in the making. And I thought, you know, I'm going to be hyper-focused, and I'm going to nail it. And, you know, the fact that I'm going to do it by myself will make it even more rewarding. And here we go. So I drove down Highway 17. I left on the 19th of September and went down Highway 17 out of Wilmington. Took the coastal route, as it were, through Myrtle Beach, Georgetown, Charleston, Savannah. You get on I-95 down there outside of Savannah in that region, or just north of Savannah, whatever it is, Ridgeland or somewhere. You get on 95 South. I did that. And from the get-go, the challenges began. And little did I know, though, what these challenges would be. And that's what I'm saying here. There's going to be, when this is all said and done, you're going to go and look back at this episode and go, man, the stuff that Mark had to go through by himself on that mission, it really, really did remind me of the movie that was out in 1998, and I've referenced it before, The Truman Show, where Truman Burbank is challenged by all these different seemingly outside forces to keep him in his universe that was created for this reality television show that he's a part of, you know, keeping him in his world, fire going across the road, the threat of plague and who knows what else, airplane crashes, you know, the fear of water, his father dying in the ocean, whatever they could do to keep him confined and scared, you know, there was all these challenges. And I felt like that after the Rita mission. I really, really did. But it's also ironic, too, and I'm a big lover of film. I think you know that by now. You can see that or hear it or whatever in the way that I score my productions. I do the music myself, as you know. And I love film. I love the art of filmmaking and whatnot, and I reflect back on it, and it's part of pop culture. And TV is the same way. I also felt like, not only kind of when it was over, I felt like Truman Burbank looking back on it, like, man, there was all these challenges. But along the way, before those challenges, I felt like Jack Bauer from the TV show 24. If you remember that, that was on Fox for a number of years. That every season of 24 covered 24 hours, and every episode was 1 hour of Jack Bauer, the federal agent's life. And I felt like Jack Bauer on another mission here, you know, that's kind of neat, you know, kind of like that way of handling anxiety about the previous failure that I had in Katrina, that there's a little bit of this superhero feeling to me, Jack Bauer, a fictional superhero type character, that it's bigger than life. What I'm doing, I'm trying to tackle this immense force of nature with a lot of things going against me, even if I do not know what those forces are. Okay, so on this first leg of the journey, on the 19th, I decided that I would stop in Lake City, Florida for the night to get a good night's sleep at the Hampton Inn there and figure out what I want to do the next day, whether I would go south down I-75, which is where Lake City is oriented. It's at I-75 and I-10, roughly. Very nice location. Turns out it would be sort of a stopping off point for lots and lots of missions in subsequent years. In fact, it was already a meeting place in 05. Mike Watkins and I would meet up there for various Lowe's events that he would ride with me to. You know, Jesse Bass and I stopped there one time going to a particular event. I remember the very first time I ever had Texas Roadhouse, just a little side story, was in Lake City, Florida, in the year 2005 with Jesse. We were on our way to events over in Mobile and somewhere in New Orleans or Gulfport or something. I don't remember those details, but I remember the Texas Roadhouse. Yes, that was in 2005, and yes, I remember that. but it is what it is, right? So yes, Lake City would become this important junction for the Hurricane Highway, quite literally. And this would be no different. So that was my target. Let's get to Lake City, check in at the Hampton Inn, get a good night's sleep, reassess everything on the 20th, and I would determine whether or not I go south down to the Florida Keys, which I really wanted to do. I'm going to be honest with you. It was like I've always wanted to be in the Keys for a solid hurricane. Nothing too extreme, you know, where it becomes life-threatening for someone like me who knows what they're doing. You know, and I always have to be careful when I, you know, there's a balance there. Life-threatening, any hurricane can be life-threatening if you don't know how to deal with it. That's sort of the caveat. You know, a thunderstorm can be life-threatening if you don't respect it, if you're out in the open and you're playing golf. You understand? So everything is relative. So yes, I wanted to go to the Keys and experience the wind blowing through those real palm trees. And they are, they're gorgeous down there. Real palms down in the tropics, not palm trees that get planted by Jeff's Nursery or something like that, that you see in Wilmington or Myrtle Beach. Those are not real palm trees. They're not native. That's down in South Florida, and they are gorgeous, and I wanted to see that and see the beautiful waters of the Keys kind of get churned up and just, you know, experience what it's like to be in hurricane conditions in the Florida Keys. But, of course, I didn't want it to be too bad. You got to be careful what you wish for. Or if it looked like it was not going to be a big impact in the Keys, because that's a haul from Lake City to the Keys, you know, even Marathon or Tavernier or whatever, much less Key West, that is a haul. And then you got to get out of there and get all the way over to the Gulf Coast somewhere. So it was a big choice, really. I mean, this was a monumental choice I had to make, because it would ultimately, potentially, you know, change the course of history. I mean, who knows what could have happened if I went south versus what I ended up doing. And, of course, that was to just go ahead and go west towards Texas. Spoiler alert, some of you may already know my Rita mission. But, you know, that's the choice that I still had to make. I didn't know that yet on the 19th. So I made my way down I-95. I get through Savannah. Late in the afternoon, very early evening hours, 5, 6 p.m., something like that. And I stopped in Richmond Hill at a TA, the Travel Centers of America. Big travel plaza, lots and lots of gas pumps, a couple restaurants inside. You know, they had showers and bathrooms for the truckers and, you know, a gift shop. You know, and when you travel like I do, and I've certainly put a lot of miles on the old Tahoe, and in the years since we put that out of commission in 2018, a lot of miles on other vehicles, rental vehicles, especially in these last few years. So yes, you get to, used to your different stops and where you can depend on a good place to relax, get gas, get something to eat, use the bathroom where the bathrooms are cleanest, where there's not as many creepy people. Seriously, you know, truckers know this, and people who travel via RV, they know this too, and I was learning over the course of my career. And Richmond Hill was one of these such oases, or oasis, singular, whatever. It was an oasis in the desert, to try to follow that metaphor of the Hurricane Highway. Where are you going to stop? And it was going to be Richmond Hill. And I figured I'll grab myself some Pizza Hut. Yes, I do remember that detail. How many times do I have to tell you? For whatever reason, I can remember these things. And I think it's because they're connected to other important things are the reasons why I can remember them. And you'll see what I'm talking about here. Kind of getting into the psychology of how the heck does he remember these details? Well, you'll see. So one of the things, though, that I wanted to do at the TA was get some postcards and mail them once I got to Mississippi or Alabama or something like that en route to Texas, because I knew I was going to be gone for about a week. And I wanted to mail those back home to my family. I wanted to send a couple to my kids. I had little kids at the time. And I wanted to send a postcard to Rebecca, you know, because it's hard. I might love what I do, and I have a huge passion for it, and I'm like more dedicated about my work than anything else, probably. And a lot of people do that in their career. I understand that. And it can be detrimental. You got to be careful. I know there's a balance, work, life, etc. But I certainly missed my family. You know, every time I went out, it didn't matter if I'm going to go down to Charleston for a hurricane, you know, or the Outer Banks, and I'm just going to be gone 2 days. That's still 2 days that I'm away from my family. And yes, raising children is hard. It's not, you don't just sit around like, oh, it's easy. If it was easy, everybody would have seven kids like I do. And so the point being, I missed everybody. And I felt like, oh man, I want to get some postcards. So I went in and I shopped around in this gift shop, saw the postcard rack, got a few postcards. They were cool. I don't remember what they were. Those details, I can't recall. But I got some, and I remember I got a few snacks, I'm sure, mostly unhealthy stuff, knowing me back then. And went to the checkout, paid for everything, and then I went over to Pizza Hut. It was one of those Pizza Hut Expresses where you could order the pre-made, you know, like a little personal pan pizza, three garlic sticks, and a big drink. You go fill it yourself. Very common at all of these travel center places all around the country back then, and even more common today, especially with places like Buc-ee's that are popping up more and more around the country, especially the South. I mean, it's probably the only place they are, but yes, that's how I did things. That's the life on the road. That's how things run on the Hurricane Highway, for real. So I got my stuff. I ate my, you know, pizza that's not good for you, whatever. Drank my big Pepsi. Probably had a candy bar with it. You know, very unhealthy, I know. A lot different now, believe me. But back then, that's the way it worked. And I went and I got gas at the same time, you know, filled up the Tahoe. I believe that had a 21, 22-gallon tank, so I filled that up. You know, and just, again, these details are very important because something's going to happen that almost derailed everything. So all of these details are for a point, okay? So as they say, stay with me. We're getting there. So I do all this stuff, and I remember every once in a while texting and or talking to Mike, Jesse, or Paul, just checking on things, the hurricane or whatever it was. I can't remember if Rita was a hurricane at this point on the 19th. That kind of doesn't matter. But, you know, how are things going with the website? You know, Paul could look in on things related to that. Maybe Mike posted something for me on Hurricane Track. Whatever. You know, this was a moment that I could take some time to myself. I'm off the road, getting something to eat, relaxing, checking in on things. The stream is running. I'm talking to people over the stream. They're emailing me. I mean, it was amazing. It's just, and think about how it is now. It's even more interactive than that by a factor of 1,000 because of social media. But that was my world, and I was by myself. So it's different. I needed that connection, you know, to, hey, I'm sending some postcards back home. That made me feel good. It made me, you know, feel good to be able to reach out, call Mike. Hey, Mike, what's going on with Rita? What do you think? Talk to Jesse. You know, how are things, from what you're seeing, what are they saying on Storm 2K? For example, very prominent site then, still is now. Talking to Paul, you get it. You know, just constantly, constantly going forward. And so I finished up, got plenty of gas, ready to go. Tahoe's doing great. Got my postcards, got my snacks, and I'm ready to hit the road. So I leave Richmond Hill. Again, it's just south of Savannah. I hit I-95, cruising through Georgia, no problem at all. The sun goes down. It's all hot as blazes because of that big ridge of high pressure sitting over the deep south, extending down into the Gulf Coast states. Hot sinking air where I was. That is the signature of the makings of a powerful hurricane to the south of that big high pressure area down over the Florida Straits. Eventually the Florida Straits as Rita came through. You know what I mean? Like, I just knew everything was all connected. That big heat ridge where I was, that's a symptom that there's a powerful hurricane developing on the southern periphery. And it'll probably move to the west and then gradually gain latitude on the western periphery. You know what I mean? Everything is connected, and I was really feeling it. really feeling it. Like, I am in my element. I'm reborn here, this idea of unmanned cameras changing the world, live video from the vehicle nonstop. I've got the instrumentation on top with the anemometer on the Tahoe. You know, I felt like I'm the man. I really am. I'm going to conquer this. I'm going to do it. It's going to be amazing. Everything's just going full throttle. And I coast down the road. It's great. Probably listening to XM radio or something like that. Just life's grand, right? Get on into Florida, pass through Jacksonville, get on I-10, and then you go to the Beltline, whatever, to go I-10 west. And it's dark now, several hours later, and I cruise on into Lake City, pull into the Hampton Inn, and I'm like, oh, yes, I've made it. And it's just a feeling of like, whew, you know, if you guys travel a long way, you're road weary. That was me. But I just had all this like positivity, you know, nothing could touch me. It was like I was wearing this coat that protected me from the outside world, this invisible coat that everything was perfect. And I turned the Tahoe off and looked around. I was like, all right, let's go check in. You know, back then there's no app. You don't check in with the app like you do today. And I'm going to grab my wallet. And I'm going to go in. And I'm going to give them my credit card or debit card, whatever the heck it was I would have had back then. And take a few pieces of equipment in and go to sleep. You know, I was thinking ahead. Like, all right, let's go. And I'm like, well, where's the wallet? It's not on the center console. Is it in the passenger seat underneath all those wrappers of junk food I've eaten? Nope, not there. Well, let's look and see if it's on the floorboard. Nope, not on the floorboard. Now, just a little bit of panic starts to set in. That invincibility coat that I'm wearing started getting a, you know, a little bit of a dent in the armor, if you will. Where the heck's my wallet? Can't find it. Maybe I put it up on the dash of the Tahoe. Look up there. Not there. And now think about it. As all this is happening, 10 seconds, 20 seconds, 30 seconds, 40 seconds goes by. And when you can't find your wallet, you're like, oh man. And it just gets exponentially worse every 10 seconds that goes by. It's like losing a child at Disney World or another crowded place. Really, it's like the two terrors are the same, for real, you know, and you're like, oh my goodness, like, all right, seriously, where's my wallet? It's not funny anymore. And I look down in the doorwell of the driver door. Is it down there? No. Is it underneath the seat? No. And I'm like, all right, what? Well, I better get out and start looking for it, like for real. So I grab my flashlight and I'm looking around, looking under things, looking behind things. And I remember the Tahoe is loaded for bear with the three cases, other stuff, cooler, clothes, wires everywhere, cameras, batteries, chargers, who knows what, all kinds of things, gas cans, whatever, snacks, wrappers, right? No wallet. And I'm panicking now. Now it's been probably 90 seconds that I've been at the Hampton Inn, and I get out and I go around to the passenger side. I'm scrambling around on the floorboard. I'm looking under the floor mat. I mean, dude, it's full on, like, blood pressure's up. You know, heart rate is probably dangerous. All those bad things, I'm sure. Oh, boy. It was total and utter panic, terror, horror. And, like, the night security guard kind of walks by. And he's like, you know, good evening, sir. Everything okay? And I remember I was almost in full-on panic attack mode. I was, like, breathing hard. You know, I don't know. I can't find my wallet. And oh my gosh, you know, and I remember I was just very short with him, not rude or anything, but I was like, I don't know, I can't find my wallet, and it's killing me. And he's like, well, good luck, let me know if you need anything. You need a light? He had like that big mag light that security guards have, and I had a decent flashlight. I was like, no, sir, thank you, I'm good. And I'm looking around, and I go back over to the driver's side, and I sit back in the seat, kind of retracing my steps, and I started thinking back to the TA in Richmond Hill. Did I leave it on the gas pump? Because the last thing I did before I left was I got gas. I remember I started retracing my steps because, right, that's what they tell you to do. I remember, okay, I pulled into the TA and I parked first. I'm not one of those people, for the lack of a more colorful word, that begins with an A and has the word hole in it, that just leaves their vehicle at the pump and then goes in for 30 minutes. You know, I might leave it for a couple of minutes if it's not, you know, overly populated, but really, have some respect. And I've always been that way. And so, yes, I pulled into a spot and I went in and I got my postcards and I got my junk food and I got my Pizza Hut and I sat down and I ate my Pizza Hut. And I know I had to have my wallet because how would I have paid for all of that? Duh. Okay, you had it in the TA. I left, went, got in the Tahoe, drove over to the gas pumps, filled up the Tahoe's tank, must have left it on top of the pump. Ugh. And I could see it in my mind's eye. You moron. You put it on top of the gas pump, pumped the gas, put everything back together, whatever, the gas tank closed, and you took off. And I bet you that wallet is either still sitting there now or somebody got it, God forbid. Oh, I just knew it. I knew it. Like, for some reason, my brain said, Mark, this is your brain speaking. That is what happened. You left it on the gas pump at Richmond Hill. I swear to you, folks, I literally could see that in my head. Ding, 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 that's what you did. So I looked them up on my laptop, that TA. I called the Pizza Hut. Actually, they gave me the number to the gas station part and told them what happened. A couple minutes went by. Nobody's turned anything in. Whatever, and I'm just like, oh my goodness, I am in so much trouble. You know, I've got plenty of money in, you know, for funding. I don't have any cash with me because any cash that I had would have been in the wallet, and the wallet is gone. So I'm going to have to figure out with Rebecca how to have her wire me some money somewhere. What is that, Western Union I started? I mean, I was like already basically in, you know, the different stages of grief or whatever they say. I was already in acceptance mode here, I guess, in terms of the stages of losing something important. I had accepted it. You know, there's denial. I couldn't have lost it. Are you kidding me? Or whatever. Anger and all that stuff. Now I was in the acceptance phase within 3 or 4 minutes of all of this happening. And I'm thinking, that's what I'll do. It'll be okay. Your wife can wire you a couple $1,000, you're going to need it, you know, might as well be safe, but gosh, that's going to be a lot of cash. You'll have, oh man, I won't have a driver's license. That's going to suck. You know, if a hotel needs it, and I started panicking again, what am I going to do? I mean, I can have the money. Oh my gosh, I probably should call Paul. Oh man, I mean, it was like stress. All of a sudden, Mark's coat of invincibility, gone. It was gone. I might as well have left the coat back at the TA too, you know? And I got out and I walked around to the back of the Tahoe, the back, you know, the back door, the passenger door, and, you know, the second row. And there's just all this equipment back there. And I opened it up. I don't even remember why. Maybe just to look back there to see if the wallet had fallen backwards or something. And sure enough, there it was on the floorboard behind the passenger seat. Just plain as day. Couldn't, I mean, you go from like, it's all over, this is going to be a disaster, all of this positivity ruined, you know, to, oh, there it is. And I mean, the instant change in my demeanor is one for the record books. Like, no, like, you know, running around the Tahoe, holding my wallet in the air. Yes, I found it. I have found my wallet. There was no celebration, no, you know, whatever. I was like, oh, good, there it is. Like, crisis averted, case closed, be more careful, for God's sake, right? And that was it. I closed the door, locked the Tahoe, walked in, checked into the hotel, and my heart rate calmed down. Everything, blood pressure returned more to wherever the heck it was back then, probably too high to begin with. But you get the idea. It was over. I found it. And life could return to, well, I got my invincibility jacket back, basically. My cloak of invincibility, whatever. It was back, and all was well. And I just kind of smiled like, wow, life is good. You're good, man. You're going to do good on this mission. Everything's going to work out. You didn't leave your wallet there. I still don't know why my brain lied to me and told me that it was sitting on top of the gas pump. I maybe had put it on there, pumped the gas, put the gas thing back, the handle back, the whatever, and then put the wallet back. You know, maybe there's some reason. That's all deep psychology that's beyond me. But I remember thinking, why did I visualize that I lost it? Like, that was the worst case scenario. But it was all good. And so the story of the almost lost wallet would be the first of what would become a series of potentially very unfortunate events that I would overcome either completely, you know, knowingly of and aware of. I was aware of some of these issues that would fall in front of me over the days to come. Some of them I wouldn't know about for a long time later, and we're going to get into that. So the first episode of the Rita saga, you know, comes to an end now. That's it. That's the story. That's all, you know, I'm in Lake City. I made it. I didn't lose my wallet. And I'm going to get a good night's sleep. And I'm going to wake up and I'm going to decide what to do about whether or not to go to the Florida Keys, which I was leaning towards it, like I said. I love going down there. It's a beautiful area, and I would love to see it in a hurricane. Set up some of these cameras, maybe. I mean, who knows? Get those wind readings. I was excited about that. Or do I just continue west on 10 across 2,000 miles of Florida Panhandle, which is hyperbolic, as they say? It's not really 2,000 miles, but it sure seems like it. And if you've ever done it, you know. And we've talked about it here on this podcast. Do I do that and just head on towards Texas, whatever? Maybe South Padre eventually? All of that was still up in the air. But it didn't matter, because at this point, I am safe. I've made it this far. The Tahoe is running great. I got a full tank. Well, a couple gallons down from, you know, Richmond Hill, probably. Maybe a half tank at this point. You know what I mean? Everything's good. I didn't lose the wallet. People are happy on the new Hurricane LiveNet site. Everything's running great. Called my wife. Everything's great here. I mean, it was perfect. So I went and got some sleep, and I would get up on the 20th of September and continue the journey from there. So we will pick up on that in the next episode, and I will be joined by my good friend Paul Bowman for the duration of the next episode, which is going to be absolutely remarkable. It'll also be fairly lengthy as well, because we got a lot to get through here, covering several days in one episode. But I'm telling you, there is some riveting stuff coming up in the rest of the Rita saga as Hurricane Rita barrels through the Florida Keys area and eventually makes its way towards the Gulf Coast, and you know where I would end up for that. All right. Well, there you go. The story, the legendary almost missing wallet. That was the punchline of this episode. Who would have thought? Hey, as always, it's great to have you guys tuning in. Whatever I'm talking about, these are those details, again, that you just can't get from a documentary or whatever. You know, this is like if we're just sitting around talking, these are the stories I would tell you. Very personal. Very detailed, and I'm glad to be able to do it, and I appreciate your support each and every month on Patreon to make this possible. And it's my pleasure to sit on this side of the microphone and give you these details that you can't find anywhere else. It's fantastic, and I appreciate you being there for me. That'll about do it for this episode of Stories from the Hurricane Highway. I will be back next week as we continue the Rita saga. I am Mark Suddeth. We'll do it again next week.